Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. When investment performance matters, make sure your savings are with Zurich. Visit Zurich.ie to find out more.
Now, Ukraine is preparing for a fresh wave of attacks after reports of a significant buildup of Russian troops in the east of the country. Earlier today, President Putin signed a decree ordering over 130,000 new conscripts into the army. He also said that from tomorrow, so-called unfriendly countries buying gas from Russia must pay in ruble, a move intended to increase returns from Russian exports. And as we heard earlier, Germany has rejected this demand and activated an emergency plan for potential fuel rationing in that country. Well, meanwhile, peace negotiations between Moscow and Kyiv are expected to resume tomorrow. And I've been getting analysis of their prospects from Jonathan Powell, who was Tony Blair's chief of staff for 10 years and was also chief British negotiator in Northern Ireland. Mr. Powell has met and negotiated with President Putin on several occasions.
Well, I think the Ukrainian side is right to keep trying to get into negotiations. They must always keep trying because they're the ones who have to relieve the pressure on their people. But I'm afraid I don't think these are serious negotiations yet. There's no evidence that Putin himself is personally involved or personally taking any decisions on this. And the Russians have a track record of using negotiations as a weapon, as a way to apply pressure to the other side, as a way of trying to get out of them concessions without having to do anything themselves, a way of gaining intelligence and also propaganda to show that they're being the good guys and to persuade the Chinese and Indians they're really looking for a way out when they're not in fact doing so. So I don't think we've yet reached the stage of serious negotiations, and I don't think we will until we get to a mutually hurting stalemate, which I fear is not yet in place.
So how would you advise the Ukrainian president then on his approach to the negotiations, but also then in parallel to the war itself?
Well, in terms of the negotiations, I think he is doing the right thing in trying to keep the channel going, to use those people who offer their services as a third party. He's had Turkey, he's had Israel, France and Germany and a number of oligarchs. So I think it's sensible to explore every avenue, but to be realistic about what's possible with the Russians at this stage and not to offer concessions that are not going to be acceptable to the Ukrainian people. So clearly from opinion polls, Ukrainian people are prepared to go along with the idea they won't join NATO and they should be neutral, but they're not prepared to give up territory. Having spilt their blood to defend that territory, they're not going to agree to that. Mm-hmm. I think the other thing he has to think about is the structure of these negotiations, because this is not just a negotiation with Russia. If he wants security guarantees, the sort he's been talking about, an Article 5 type security guarantee, he has to get that from the United States and from other Western powers, and he needs to negotiate with them. And if the Russians want sanctions lifted, they're going to have to negotiate with the US and others. So I think in a way this is a three-way negotiation, and I think it would help Ukraine to have the United States, EU, UK and others all, if not at the table, at least in a sort of three-way negotiation, a sort of group of friends on the side of Ukraine, negotiating with Ukraine and negotiating with the Russians to reduce the pressure the Russians can bring to bear on the Ukrainians.
And the big bat of sanctions being consistently used by the West. I mean, I heard and read Mikhail Khodorkovsky, an enemy of Putin, of course, and one of the oligarchs who's now in exile from Russia, saying that we must use sanctions to suffocate Putin. And I'm paraphrasing, but would you go along with that?
I think it's right that we have to use sanctions. I think it is good that this time, unlike 2014, the West has put some real sanctions, some real pressure in place. But really, if we look back at history, sanctions have never solved a problem like this anywhere, even South Africa, actually. It wasn't the sanctions that resolved the problem. And I think when President Zelensky says in the end, what you need is a negotiation to end a conflict like this, he's right. So I'm all for sanctions. I think we should be upping the sanctions at the moment. But Putin himself, like Saddam Hussein in Iraq before him, is quite capable of surviving sanctions because he is quite rich enough to outlast them. It's the Russian people who will suffer from these sanctions, and I don't think Putin could care less what happens to the Russian people.
But even if money starts to run, I know it's a long way away from running dry, but if the limitless supply of money that seems to be at Putin's disposal and Russia's disposal as a result of oil and gas and other means, if that begins to run dry in any way, would that scare Putin?
unfortunately, I think he's still got plenty of money to propagate this war. And I mean, we're in a slightly bizarre situation that we Europeans are actually paying for Putin to fight this war. We're buying his gas at inflated prices and his oil at inflated prices, and we're giving him money to fight the war. He's making a play at the moment to say it should be paid for in rubles. But in the end, he can't cut the gas off because he can't actually stop it flowing without causing explosions in Russia. But we have got ourselves in this odd situation of paying for the war.
You met Vladimir Putin, didn't you, along with Tony Blair some time ago now. What did you make of him? Did you get an insight into his psychology?
Well, first met Putin in 1999, December 1999, when Tony Blair went to St. Petersburg to meet Putin while he was running for president. Tony Blair was the first Western leader to meet him in those circumstances. And he seemed at the time to be a sort of a new sort of leader, unlike Boris Yeltsin, who was for much of the time drunk and quite difficult to deal with. He was someone who looked rather unassuming, quite professional, said he wanted to work with the West. And even as late as 2001, at the time of 9/11, on the day of 9/11, he called Tony Blair offering help and intelligence help and basing and all that sort of stuff. But it, over time, he seemed to get more and more hubristic as we saw him again and again. He, in this absolute power that he had in Russia, he got more servants, more horses in his house, more luxury. And I fear that's over 22 years of dictatorship has gone to his head, particularly the last 2 years being locked up by himself because of COVID. So I fear even if he was originally a reformer, he certainly isn't now and has become a dictator determined to hang on to power.
And on that note then, both yourself and Tony Blair have said recently that since the invasion of Ukraine, that the West has been maybe too timid or has sent mixed messages at the very least to Russia, and that you should be ready, the West should be ready to go to war if a red line is crossed in Ukraine. Now, if that threat were to be explicitly sent to Moscow and the Kremlin, do you think it would deter Putin?
Well, we already have sent a red line. That red line is if he touches an inch of NATO territory, there will be war. So he's on warning for that. If he tries a play in the Baltics or in Poland, there will be war. What we've been less clear about is what our red lines are in Ukraine itself. If he were to use, for example, chemical or biological weapons there, we had a red line when Assad used chemical weapons in Syria, but we never actually enforced it. And having a red line you don't enforce is very dangerous because you're sending a signal of weakness to a dictator like this, and you mustn't do that. But I think we need to be clear, at least to ourselves, what we're going to do if he does use chemical weapons, or even worse, a tactical nuclear weapon, which is entirely possible, unfortunately, if he gets more and more desperate.
Why do you think, Jonathan, we are unclear about what those red lines are in the West?
I think because there's no unanimity of how we should deal with this. No one wants to enter into the Third World War by mistake. So there's a real risk for that. So I think that's the problem that we're dealing with. And that's why I think we've been unclear on it.
Do you think, since you, I think you've written about the need to go to war, if need be, say, do you think that the risk is worth paying? Because it risks involving China, possibly Iran, Russia's a nuclear power. The risks are quite large in going to war, aren't they?
Of course. We want at all costs, or most costs, to try and avoid particularly tipping into war by accident. That's something that we must not do. We must not, like the First World War, end up in those circumstances. But the danger is, if you're trying to avoid war at any circumstances, you've got the risk of actually falling into war by mistake. You know, in 38 and 39, we were not clear about what we were going to do, and Hitler kept pushing. And this time we have to be clear.
The war in Iraq has been cited on the Russian side as, well, the Americans and the UK didn't get out of Iraq. They overstayed their welcome. It was illegitimate to begin with back in nearly 20 years ago or so now. And that is being used by Russia. Did it give people like Putin a fig leaf to go to war in situations like this?
No, I don't really think that it did. I mean, I think that's really stretching things to think that Putin's decided he's going to go to war because of what happened in Iraq all those years ago, because he's been to a series of wars since then. I'm afraid he doesn't feel that any of these rules apply to him. And unless we make it clear that we are going to make those rules apply, he will carry on doing that. I think the analogy in Iraq actually is more like the analogy of Saddam when he invaded Kuwait, when we did actually go to war. You know, unlike Ukraine, we went to defend Kuwait. We sent in massive forces and drove him out. We're not, of course, doing that in Ukraine because we're afraid of getting into the Third World War. And that's a very sensible fear to have. But one way to get into the Third World War is not to be clear about your red lines, as we failed to do in 1938 and 1939. And we must learn that lesson this time.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you, since you have expertise in negotiations in Belfast in the north as well, about the situation there, if I may, Jonathan, because we have an election for the Stormont Assembly ongoing now. And it's quite vicious very early on, the campaigning there. And there are some security threats and our own Minister for Foreign Affairs involved in one already. Are you worried about the way things are panning out in the north? Are you worried about the implementation and the adherence to the Good Friday Agreement and the damage that the Northern Ireland Protocol has been doing and is doing?
Well, I mean, I think I'm worried about the damage that Brexit has done to Northern Ireland, because what Brexit effectively has done, and particularly the way this government, the Conservative government, has implemented it, is to put the issue of identity back on the top line again. You know, the whole point of the Good Friday Agreement was not to settle the issue of United Ireland or United Kingdom, because people wanted different things. But we made that issue, it was an agreement to disagree, and we put that issue on the back burner. What Brexit has done by having the need to have a border somewhere, either on the island of Ireland or in the Irish Sea, is put that issue of identity right back at the top again. And that's a problem as we go into this election, because the unionists on one hand have said they can't have a border in the Irish Sea, the protocol must go, which is not going to be possible, and they've pulled down the institutions. Now, if we have these elections, and if Sinn Féin, as the opinion polls suggest, win and become the first minister, then it's going to be very, very difficult to get these institutions up and running again, because the unionists have made it clear they're going to find it impossible to agree to that. So I don't think I worry about going back to the Troubles. I really don't think that's going to happen. But what we're going to have, I fear, is further political instability and finding ourselves with a crisis on the institutions. And that will probably lead to some more street violence as we get into the White Nights of May and June. I mean, I hope it doesn't, but that's what I fear.
And that is Jonathan Powell, Tony Blair's Chief of Staff for 10 years and former Chief British Negotiator in Northern Ireland, speaking to me a little earlier on.